Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you like to read propulsive psychological suspense fiction, you need to read Dan Shaun's novels and short stories. His work includes the bestseller Ill Will, which Publishers Weekly named one of the 10 best books of 2017. Dan's latest novel is Sleepwalk. Former Beta guest Ruman Alam describes Sleepwalk as a frightening indictment of corporate power and the surveillance state, as well as a tender story about the depth of parental love. Ruman is bang on, and Dan does it with a fair share of humor, too. We caught up with Dan to talk about his fourth novel and the challenges that he set for himself.
Yeah, there were a lot of challenges that I wanted to give myself. Most of my other novels are multiple perspective, and I wanted to do a book that was in first person and present tense, and that took place basically in one timeline that lasts about 2 weeks. And all of those things, I think, are kind of invisible to the reader, but they're extremely hard as a writer to pull off. I also knew, having written a really, really dark book, that I wanted to do something that had a little more comedy to it. And I found that in Will's voice. I'm trying to do all the genres. So this is my road novel.
Yeah, definitely. Your protagonist is a man of many names, including Will Bear and The Barely Blur. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Yeah, he's a mercenary, kind of a red shirt who works for a shadowy corporation called Value Standard Enterprises. Nobody really knows what they do, but he goes around the country doing sort of odd criminal jobs for them, whether it's delivering unfortunate people to an unfortunate job or cleaning up after a massacre or burning down a blogger's house. He does a little bit of everything. And then at the beginning of the novel, he starts getting these phone calls from a young woman who claims to be his daughter. And that sets the plot in motion.
Mm-hmm, most definitely. Will spends a fair bit of time thinking about his past, especially his relationship with his mother. Can you tell us about this without revealing any spoilers?
Well, Will was raised by a woman who is a kind of con woman, and he was raised off the grid. She made sure that he didn't have a birth certificate or a social security number or anything that could allow him to be identified or cataloged. She basically raised him as a sidekick that she used during her various schemes. In some ways, I was inspired by the movie and the novel, The Grifters, in that relationship.
Early on in the book, you mentioned this already, I want to dive deeper into it, though. You mentioned that Will is driving along in his camper van with his faithful companion, his dog Flip, when there's this call from this woman. Can you tell us a bit more about the call?
Will is not supposed to be able to be contacted. He has dozens of burner phones under different names. And the first thing that he thinks is that somehow he's been breached and that this person has it in for him, I guess. And he needs to figure out how to find her and kill her because she knows his name and knows where he is. As things go along, he becomes more and more doubtful. And a lot of the suspense of the novel is him trying to figure out if this really is his daughter or not.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or whether it's just someone trying to scam him or con him. Yeah, so she's this 20-year-old woman, claims to be his biological daughter, and she claims that she's the product of one of his long-ago sperm donations, but Will is suspicious that she has artificial intelligence. So how does this call from this woman who is named Cammy, or at least calls herself that, how does that change his trajectory of his life?
He's been living really on his own and without any real connections. And I feel like one of the things I was interested in is taking this isolated guy and bringing this spark of human connection into his life and seeing how that played out for him. Because despite his criminal ways, there's a tenderheartedness about him. I think we see it even when he's a little boy. There's a kind of innocence and wishfulness and hope of making human connection.
Yes, Yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love about your novels and short stories is that so many of your characters have difficulties with their thought processes. That's something that I can really relate to. Why do so many of your characters struggle with self-doubt, or am I just projecting my own self-doubt onto them?
I think it's just part of the emotion that I'm feeling when I'm writing. I don't go to the page feeling confident, partially because I don't really know what's going to happen next, but also partially because that's just sort of one of the ways that I tend to live in the world, is feeling a lot of self-doubt, feeling occasional bouts of self-loathing. And I guess it's easy for me to relate to those characters too.
Yeah. So even you still experience the self-doubt and loathing, even although you've written so many, you know, written four novels and what, three or four short story collections?
I don't know. It never seems to change. It never seems to. I mean, I feel like there's always the possibility that this next book is going to be a huge flop, that everyone is going to hate it, that I'm not even going to be able to finish it. All of those things are they wind around, and it doesn't seem to get better with time. So I'm still getting older, so maybe next book or the book after.
So Sleepwalk is set in the near future, but you took kind of a subtle approach to the futuristic technology in the book. What did you decide to include and why?
It was a kind of practical decision, and I think a lot of writers are struggling right now with how to write about the contemporary experience, because things are changing so rapidly. You know, like by the time your book is finally published, it's going to be 2 or 3 years down the line. And if you think about what things were like even 2 or 3 years ago, we've seen so many radical and crazy changes in our lives just in over a period of a couple years. So I tried to add things that I thought were possible or likely. This is a future where we're, you know, maybe one more pandemic down the line, or one more environmental crisis down the line, or one more constitutional crisis down the line. And most of the stuff either has been or very shortly will be reality. And so there are drones that are surveillance drones. That's not out of the question. There's security drones. There's some robots that walk along the side of the road and advertise stuff. There's some stuff with cloning and DNA and genetics that is mostly possible. Some stuff is a little bit outside of what we can actually do. But, you know, I wrote about using animals to grow organs, and that was not happening at the time, but I mean, it is now.
Getting back to this idea of self-doubt that you have about writing, I've read that as you have gotten older, you've started trusting your unconscious mind more and more. How does this increasing trust affect the way you write?
I don't write with an outline. I feel like it makes me more open to being surprised by things and to letting the characters sort of discover things that I would not necessarily have written had I, you know, had an outline and had it all sort of figured out beforehand. For me, that's the main reason that I enjoy writing, is just discovering these surprises that pop out almost like I didn't write them myself. Despite the self-doubt and self-loathing or whatever, that's a good feeling. And that, I mean, it's really exciting, and it really just delights me when something like that happens.
Yeah. And if you didn't have that voyage of discovery, which you have from not using an outline, I get the impression, and from what I've read about a lot of writers, and I think it would apply to you, but I want to ask, is that if you outlined the whole novel, then yeah, where would be the fun and the joy of discovery in writing it? You'd be less motivated to write it, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. It would just feel so predetermined. I think there'd be something kind of dull about it. Part of the process of and this may sound too mystical or whatever, but letting the character develop and come alive, there's a point where they are actually outside of you, that where they're making their own decisions. There's a sense that maybe you thought something was going to happen, but then you realize, oh no, Will wouldn't do that. That's not the type of person he is. And you wouldn't have discovered that unless you had been sort of letting him unfold on his own in this weird way.
Mm, Yeah, very well said. You've said that all of your novels have been puzzles that you've created for yourself. And as you just said a few moments ago, you don't work from an outline, but instead you work with what you describe jigsaw pieces. How do you go about putting these jigsaw pieces together?
I do write with a particular genre in mind. And a genre is always a kind of container that gives you a framework to work with. So in some ways, I've got these pieces, these individual pieces, usually scenes or moments that the character experienced that may seem disconnected. But I know that once I fit them in, they're going to be pieces that in some ways are going to be necessary to replicate the structure of the genre. In this case, the road novel and the noir. You know, I know that there's going to be at least a few scenes where he has to talk to people about his past, where there's going to be this kind of mystery that's going to be explored over the course of the book. Then I begin to plug things in so that they follow that pattern.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Near the end of Sleepwalk, there's this great sentence that really captures what it's like to live in 2022. I just want to share it with you and get your take on it. Quote, "It was disconcerting to live in a time in which accepting reality required a suspension of disbelief," unquote. How does this apply to the way you're living your own life these days?
Yeah, I guess I live my life in part in denial a lot, and maybe a lot of people do. There's that meme with the dog drinking coffee in a burning
yes.
coffee shop, and the dog is thinking, this is fine. And I feel
yes.
like in some ways that's all of us right now. You know, we're looking at terrible things barreling towards us, and there's this helplessness that I think a lot of people feel. I guess the novel in some ways is a reaction to that feeling of helplessness and to that sort of blasé attitude that we have to take on to get through our daily lives and wash the dishes and feed the dogs and make dinner. But I also wanted it to be a story where somebody takes action and changes things, at least slightly for the better.
Yeah, and you've done that. And also there's a fair bit of humor in the book too.
I hope so. I really wanted it to be a funny book. I mean, I realize that it's also murdery and has like lots of dark elements, but I thought of it as funny in kind of the way the Coen brothers are funny.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, it has kind of a Coen brothers-esque vibe to it. You're absolutely right. Because, yeah, there's a lot of funny things that Will says and a lot of funny interactions he has. In the acknowledgments, you mentioned your friend, the great cartoonist Linda Barry, and you say that she walked you through the writing of this book, and if not for her advice, Sleepwalk wouldn't exist. How did Linda help?
We used to have writing sessions together, and I would just read things that I had written. Sometimes we'd just sit down together and write on a timer for 15 minutes or something like that. That was extremely helpful to me, really helped in the process of discovery. I mean, if you think about writing, just free writing for 15 minutes a day for a year, there's so much material that comes out of it. And some of it, I of course, never got to use, but it was really a great experience.
You and I have the same all-time favorite film, Alfred Hitchcock's 1958 film Vertigo. I'm just curious. Whenever there's a chance to ask a question about Vertigo, I always ask it. And I wanted to ask you, has Vertigo been an influence on your fiction in any way?
It has such a deep and abiding influence on, I think, almost all my novels and short stories, because it's so much about identity and about what's real and what's not, about whether other people are knowable. And it's also about gaslighting. And I think all of those things are major themes in my books.
Yeah, you're right. Can you tell us what genre you're going to tackle in your next novel?
Yes, it's the Western. I'm doing a dark Western that takes place in the Midwest in a traveling carnival. I mean, there's this huge history of those traveling carnivals that went around the Midwest. And I'm going back to Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, the places that where I grew up, and kind of revisiting those. I grew up in this very small town in Nebraska. It was about 20 people. And in some weird ways, I had a very asynchronic childhood. I mean, it was in the 70s and 80s, but I mean, there were still people that didn't have running water in their houses. There were still people that used outhouses. There were still like the old sod houses left in the middle of a field where people had once settled and lived in a house made of sod and rock. So that time period really still speaks to me, I guess.
Dan Shaun, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Sleepwalk. I can't wait to read your next book, The Western Noir. So please get it finished ASAP. No pressure, though.
I will do so. Thanks, Doug, for having me on.
Dan Shaun's latest novel is called Sleepwalk. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Michelle Zauner, Michael Bonfiglio, and Dan Shaun. If you want to hear it again or catch up on past episodes, click over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast catcher and click subscribe, follow, and like. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRbeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I say to myself, I'm going to make these people pay.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
So I dislike and despise groups of people, but I love individuals.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm here for me, you're here for me, and no one's here for you.